Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Is the deficit the ultimate issue? It's our election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 16. It's one of the main inspirations behind the Tea Party. Government borrowing has become so out of control, they say, that it'll bankrupt our children or tax them into the poorhouse. But is it being exaggerated as a cover for a pre-existing smaller government agenda? And how much does the math back it up? It is our election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 16, True or False, the Deficit is the Ultimate Issue. We'll get two views, first from Republican congressional candidate Nan Hayworth. She's running against Democratic incumbent John Hall here in the Lower Hudson Valley area. This includes parts of Westchester on up. This district includes Mount Kisco and Goshen and Monroe, Woodbury, West Point, Newburgh, Beacon, Hopewell Junction, Middletown, New York, that whole area. And Ms. Hayworth, we welcome you to WNYC. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you, Ryan. It's my pleasure.
How much is the deficit a defining issue for America right now, in your opinion, and how much for your campaign?
Well, it is the, if you have to choose one issue, as you have, I think it is the defining issue for the following reason. When the federal government, in the case of what I'm running for, obviously federal legislative position, when the federal government spends far more than it's taking in, then we take resources from the private sector, or you know, more than is taken in the tax revenues we expect. Let's put it that way. Then we take resources from the private sector, ultimately, to pay for the debt that we build. And you can see the detrimental effect of what's happened with ever increasing deficit spending over the past couple of years, because our unemployment rate has risen. The unemployment rate in the state of New York has nearly doubled since January of 2007. The federal deficit was roughly $400 billion in 2008. It has more than tripled, as we know, during 2009 and 2010. Each of those years, it was around $1.4 trillion. And
Can you draw that connection, though? Because others would say that the deficit, especially with respect to the stimulus and the TARP, et cetera, has gone up in response to private sector failure.
I would contend strongly that it's actually gone up in response to intervention in the markets that caused distortions that were not in line with what the public actually was inclined to spend in its own marketplace. The government intervention in the mortgage markets, combined with the Fed's holding interest rates, if you will, artificially low, created a bubble that burst to enormous cost to the American public. We are still reeling from those effects, and it had to do really almost entirely with the fact that the federal government intervened in ways in which the public actually could not afford and would not have pursued had there not been incentives created artificially to reduce the effective cost of getting mortgages, which inflated the entire mortgage marketplace and took resources away from where we would have otherwise put them more soundly.
I
don't think it's lack of regulation that did it.
Do you find genuine concern about the deficit as you campaign? Do people talk about that in that term, or is it an abstract economic question for, you know, the green shades and the policy wonks?
They talk about taxes being too high. They talk about spending being reckless, irresponsible, too great. They worry about the economy in general. They worry about jobs. They worry about, in a state like ours, they worry about being able to afford to remain in the state of New York, because the same errors that the federal government is committing, the same derelictions of duty, if you will, to be fiscally responsible, are having a terrible effect on the citizens of the state of New York. People are afraid they will not be able to live here anymore. They can't afford it. They see friends and neighbors and loved ones moving out. So they worry about taxes and spending, and those, of course, are the key components of a deficit. So ultimately, it is the deficit that we're talking about in terms that perhaps are more easily grasped in our everyday lives.
And so are there particular elements of government borrowing or spending that you find people are most concerned about when they speak about the deficit or taxes?
Sure. They talk a lot about stimulus and bailouts. In District 19, we've seen almost no beneficial effects from the stimulus. There have been a couple of isolated pieces of spending, if you will. The bailouts have had no apparent benefit here, anything that people can perceive directly. And what they see, though, is that their tax dollars are leaving their pockets at an ever faster clip, and they see that we've got a debt building up. They're very aware of the debt because, of course, deficit spending leads to accumulating debt. So, you know, they understand that if in their home lives they spent so recklessly and spent beyond what their resources could tolerate, that they go bankrupt.
When you say the bailouts, do you make a distinction at this point between the stimulus and the TARP? We've had the stimulus debate, you know, ad nauseum on this show as everywhere else. But the TARP is starting to get a pretty good reputation in a lot of circles as the government gets most of that money back, and as pertains to New York, as something that really saved New York's bacon, a lot of people say, because it saved Wall Street. And now, at least downstate, is generating a lot of the jobs that the country's private sector is creating.
You know, we're not seeing that. Number one, we're not seeing any jump in jobs in District 19. Mm-hmm. If anything, we're seeing people looking for work, and we're seeing empty storefronts, and we're seeing we have a lot of folks who have been employed in construction and related industries, and of course, those have been devastated. TARP also net cost the American taxpayer, even if the federal government is recovering through perhaps what they expected to be the means. They are recovering funds. We still ended up paying out at least $60 billion by some estimates that we will not be getting back. That was taxpayer expense.
So if you had to do that over again, if you were in Congress at the time, you would have hoped that you would have voted no on that whole thing?
Yes, sir. This was a panic that was created in some senses artificially. This was not really something that required that kind of response. So those who are being assailed for voting in favor of TARP are at risk, rightly so. The taxpayers did not benefit ultimately from a net $60 billion outlay that could have gone to the economy in other ways that we desperately need here in District 19.
So you think New York would have been better off if, in addition to Lehman Brothers, maybe, you know, AIG and Citigroup and the auto companies, et cetera, all had been allowed to go down?
Well, New York State per se is clearly as is Michigan, in a somewhat different circumstance in terms of the very limited sphere of consequences. However, we can certainly say this: we have the most vigorous financial marketplace in the world in New York City, based in New York. So I really don't doubt that the talents that we have in New York could have figured out resolution to this crisis that would have made ultimate sense. And as we see, you know, the financial returns for our fellow citizens who are working in that industry in New York City right now are superb, and I think that tells a story. I think they would have found ways to restructure and reallocate resources that would not have cost the taxpayers mm-hmm. of District 19 and elsewhere in mm-hmm. the country so dearly. We need to put resources in the private marketplace. The unemployment rate has risen, not fallen, since TARP.
My guest on WNYC is Republican congressional candidate Nan Haworth, running in the 19th district against Democratic incumbent John Hall. That's the district running roughly from Ossining on the south up to the Poughkeepsie area on the north. As we talk about the deficit, experts say you can't cut the deficit in a meaningful way by focusing on ordinary, unpopular, discretionary spending. You have to make really tough choices with respect to Medicare and Social Security, perhaps the military and tax rates on the wealthy. If you're running as a deficit hawk and identifying that as the number one issue, are you willing to make any specific tough recommendations from the places where the real money is?
One place where real money is being expended as we speak is with regard to the new health law. And while the goals are goals that we should all honor, affordable, portable health insurance for all Americans, I think that's something we all want to see. This health law is already costing American taxpayers dearly. We have at least two buildings worth of bureaucracy in Washington costing taxpayer money as we speak promulgate regulations in that regard. So the first task that faces us when we convene the new Congress in January is to repeal, defund, depower, repeal, unlikely given the numbers, but defund, depower this law and replace it with a plan that works for the American public. So that is the first key deficit reduction that we can achieve. Furthermore, we're going to have to plan on voting no to any further stimulus bills or bailouts, and we're going to have to look then, it is true, at every area of federal spending to see where economies can be achieved, where waste and fraud and abuse can be controlled. There are going to be a lot of tough decisions to make, and I trust that we're going to have a Congress that will have the resolve and discipline to do those, to start those discussions and to carry out those economies that we need to in a wise way.
Now
certainly
the,
that's what I'm going to work on.
The Congressional Budget Office scores the health care bill a slight net plus over the next 10 years. I realize a lot of people disagree with that. So maybe that's one area, but would you say anything specific with respect to Medicare or Social Security or the military or tax rates on the wealthy?
Well, the CBO, by the way, Brian, the latest scoring by the CBO, as I recall, and I think that was maybe about a month and a half ago, actually said, you know what, there will be, in fact, a net expenditure. And the calculations omitted, CBO works with the numbers they're given, omitted the fact that there is a doctor's or provider's fee fix that is going to cost us about $300 billion that was not included in the original computations. If you do, then the health law, unfortunately, ends up certainly being a net cost to the American taxpayer.
Because reimbursement rates to primary care physicians and some others are going to go up? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, actually, they're due to go down dramatically if we do not alter the formula that's used to compute them. And that's going to mean reduced access for seniors. As it was, this health law cut $500 billion for Medicare. And that is an obligation that we have to our seniors. This is a crucial point. We have obligations through Social Security and Medicare for the seniors who are now receiving these benefits and for those who are imminently going to receive them that we must honor. So we are going to have to, yes, make long-range planning for sure, but we have to look at what we can do now in terms of our the structure of our federal government and what we are spending on existing programs, including, as I said, the new health law, which is extremely costly.
The Tea Party generally calls for a balanced budget constitutional amendment, while the Republican Party's Pledge to America campaign document doesn't go that far. Which side of that are you on?
I think a balanced budget amendment would be something that would make a lot of sense. It's hard to imagine that it wouldn't. These are difficult choices. Don't get easier with time. It's like trying to repeal the law of gravity, if you will. And so I fully sympathize with that point of view, and I think a balanced budget, accounting for all the programs that are off the books, if you will, now, we have to have that kind of discipline. And even absent an amendment, we have to imagine that that were the case and work from there. So I support balanced budget measures, whatever form they may take. I think certainly in principle they are an excellent idea. We owe that to the American taxpayer and to future generations. Again, it is, the laws of economics are really very much like the laws of physics. We can't get around them.
Briefly, the president has appointed a bipartisan deficit commission, as you know, that will report its findings and recommendations after the election. Are you hoping for certain outcomes, certain recommendations?
I am hoping that they will concentrate on reducing federal spending, because to tax Americans further will penalize vigorous economic activity. It'll penalize hiring. It'll penalize our small businesses and small employers in particular, because they are disproportionately affected by measures that impose additional regulations and taxes on them.
To look at the big ticket items, they're going to propose something with respect to Medicare, with respect to Social Security. Mm-hmm. I don't know, with respect to the military, they're going to deal with taxes in some way.
Right.
Anything you're willing to go out on a limb on any of those really big ticket items that are the deficit creators?
You know, it's going to depend very much on what specifics they have to offer. They may also talk about tax increases, which I will certainly oppose. For the reason I've just mentioned to you, we are going to have a very serious approach to the long-term picture. We're going to have to look at, and we can certainly look at the projections for all the expenditures and the debt and the interest service on the debt that we are currently facing. The only way we're going to grow our way out of any of these challenges is to allow resources to remain in the private economy. So the first approach has to be to provide broad-based tax relief and spending restraint. As I've mentioned, the first measure, the most obvious one, is to stop implementation of the health law and replace it with market mechanisms that will not cost taxpayers federal dollars, but will in fact increase our efficiency and effectiveness and achieve those goals, because that is an immediate step that we can take. And then we are gonna have to have a long discussion about, when I say long, I mean a thoughtful discussion about where we go from there, because these are highly charged issues. There's no question the American public has to come along on them. So there's going to be a lot of good thought and teaching opportunities, if you will.
60 seconds, open mic. Anything you want to say to the voters in your district as they come to this choice point?
This is a crucial year. We do have two very different philosophies of government represented in this election. We have the elevation of the citizen that was represented in our Constitution, and we have empowering the federal government. That is the mode that our current House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, has taken. John Hall has voted 98% of the time with that agenda, and I think it has brought misery to our district. I want to return the economic power and the freedom that we cherish as Americans to our citizens. I want to restrain the size and scope of the federal government, reduce their taxes, and control federal spending so that we can have a much brighter future.
Republican congressional candidate Nan Hayworth running against Democratic incumbent John Hall in the 19th District in New York, roughly from Ossining on the south to the Poughkeepsie area on the north, roughly from Middletown on the west to Brewster on the east. 19th District candidate Nan Hayworth, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And as that is in the context, that interview of the question of the deficit being the ultimate issue facing the United States, she says it is. In our election series, 30 issues in 30 days, this is issue 16. We will get a second view now from Pat Garofalo, who is with the thinkprogress.org think tank and a blogger. Pat, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling.
Listen to me. We called you. You are a guest. Thank you very much for joining us. We're not going to go as long with you today as we went with the candidate in the race. And we hope to
That's
get her,
fair. I'm
her,
not running for anything.
Her opponent, John Hall, on for a candidate interview as well in the coming days, where he will get the full time. But Do you agree with the premise that the deficit is the number one issue facing America right now, at least economically?
I don't. No, it is not at all the number one issue right now. The number one issue right now is economic growth and jobs, which in the short term requires running a deficit.
Make the case.
Well, when there's an economic downturn and the government needs to step in and fill what's known as the output gap, right now the American economy is producing far less than it could because people aren't buying things and so companies aren't making things and they aren't expanding. So what you need to do is you need to pump demand into the economy, and that was the aim of the stimulus package. That's been the aim of a lot of the other jobs bills that Congress has passed, with the idea being that if people have a little extra money in their pockets, they go out and start buying things, companies then start making more, and then they need to expand out and hire more people. Until you get demand back in the economy and people start buying things again, we're never going to get out of this. And in the short term, that requires running a deficit. In the long term, the structural deficit is a problem, but none of the short-term economic recovery efforts have anything to do with the long-term structural deficit.
Well, how could they not? I mean, if you keep borrowing in the short term, and at the level of the stimulus bill, $800 billion, for example, you would probably want another big stimulus now to keep pumping money into jobs for the moment. I mean, that piles up over time, and the debt service on that piles up over time, doesn't it?
It does, but right now, the rate that we're getting, we're paying on our interest is exceedingly low. This is actually one of the best times for the government to be borrowing and making long-term investments. And then in the long term, the structural deficit, with your prior guest, you're absolutely right. The problems are in health care and they're in defense spending and they're in giving giant tax breaks to the wealthy while you're trying to fight a couple of wars. But those are divorced from things like the stimulus. In a couple of years, the stimulus is going to be gone and it's just the deficit's still going to be there regardless of whether stimulus is there or not.
We'll still have that $1 trillion in debt from the stimulus.
As long as we are getting people back to work, the costs of that are going to be negligible over the long term.
Do you think that the deficit commission that will report its findings and recommendations in December can do this in sort of a liberal way or a conservative way? Are you looking for anything that you're ready to pounce on and denounce or to actively embrace that this deficit commission might come up with?
I honestly don't have a lot of faith in the deficit commission for the simple reason that I don't think there's any way that 14 of the 18 commissioners are going to agree on anything. Already, the Republicans have ruled tax increases off the table, which in turn is going to make the Democrats rule any cuts to Social Security or Medicare off the table. So I just don't think there's any way that these guys get to anything resembling an agreement.
What would you like to see? What would Think Progress like to see?
For one thing, you have to let the Bush tax cuts expire, and then there are a few other tax increases that you have to put in, things like closing the carried interest loophole, because we have a spending and a revenue problem. The last time the budget was balanced, we had revenue at about 20% of GDP. Even under Obama's budget, it never gets above 19. So you do need to raise a little bit more revenue. But then on the spending side, you need to go after defense. Here at the Center for American Progress, we've laid out $100 billion in defense cuts that we could make. You have to go after tax expenditures. We have tons of corporate welfare in this country, $45 billion to oil companies to do what they're doing anyway and making a ton of money. Stuff like that needs to go. Agricultural subsidies, all these kind of little hidden things in the tax code to incentivize activities that companies are already doing. We've actually identified here at CAP hundreds of millions of dollars in redundant and duplicative education programs. So there are things like that. But your previous guest said, oh, we'll just comb the budget for waste, fraud, and abuse, and that will get rid of the deficit entirely, and we can never raise taxes on anybody. That's just not serious. It's a nonsensical approach.
It's very difficult for political reasons for both parties, isn't
it?
She certainly wasn't willing to get specific about the real budget busters. But then neither are the Democrats coming up and saying we need to restrict Social Security in this way or Medicare in this way or the military. I guess where they really disagree is on the Bush tax cuts. And beyond that, everybody gets fuzzy.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I'm in the enviable position of not having to get anyone to vote for me. But to get at the structural deficit, those are the kind of decisions you have to make. Those are the areas you have to go. You can't do it just by cutting stuff that nobody likes. And if you're not willing to increase taxes, even one little iota, as I think your previous guest said she wasn't, you need to cut something like $255 billion just to get to primary balance, which is balance excluding interest payments on the debt in 2015. You can't do that on waste, fraud, and abuse. They're just, the money isn't there. There aren't all these programs lying around that nobody likes and nobody's going to miss.
Pat Garofalo.
You could tweak on the edges. You can get you know, a million here, a million there doing that, but you can't get the billions and billions and billions of dollars you need to balance the budget.
Is it the biggest issue? People will disagree. It's certainly a big economic issue facing America right now, the long-term structural deficit. We thank our previous guest, Republican congressional candidate Nan Haworth, from the 19th District in the Lower Hudson Valley. And we thank Pat Garofalo, blogger with thinkprogress.org. Pat, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, a study finds everyone misuses bike lanes. Bikers, drivers, pedestrians. We'll talk to the Manhattan Borough President, Scott Stringer. It's his study. Stay tuned.